Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Jet fuel.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
And he's always got these great people from all different agencies and clients and things and gets them all together. And he always says, this isn't a pitch, you're not selling. And I kind of think everybody here knows that's not true. We might not deliver a pitch, but of course, if you seem like a smart person, if you seem like you're the sort of person who's going to give straight answers and be an empathetic human being, then you're pitching. Someone in there may well think, I wonder if we can do something with that guy. I think it's because people think that selling, it's like a admitting that you're not marketing yourself well enough without realizing that selling is part of marketing. I think it's that, if we have to ring up people and sell what we do, we can't be that good. And that's a nonsense, because you're literally for other companies doing exactly that.
The Fuel podcast is brought to you by The Advertist, the new business prospecting platform. If you and your team are putting together a new business push, then you'll know you need to thoroughly research your market for brands, contacts, people moves, tenders, mergers and acquisitions. But all that takes up valuable time. If you want to save yourself a whole load of trouble, then subscribe to The Advertist. The Advertist gets you to the door. All you need to do is push it open. You can find The Advertist at www.theadvertist.com. That's theadvertist.com. Welcome, sales prospectors, grafters and crafters. If you're curious about new business, then this is the podcast for you. I'm host of The Fuel, Keith Smith. And before we tackle the nitty gritty of the business of sales, let's catch up with Jeremy Davis, who this week is getting his columns in a twist over the subject of data and spreadsheets.
What's the most important thing in new business? It's an impossible question to answer because, as we all keep telling people who really should listen, there is no one single thing. But high on the list of the most important things is data. You have to know the right people to get in touch with and where to get in touch with them. Agency bosses love data, but one thing they don't love is databases. Slow, they cry. Clunky, they rage. Ugly, unsexy. This isn't what I got into marketing for, they rant. All of which is fair enough. Databases don't win awards, and nobody's ever put a massive poster of a contact level record complete with call notes, DDI and Twitter handle on the wall in reception. But then these same exceptionally clever, intuitive and persuasive agency leaders stick everything on a spreadsheet. It may be that they've been duped by that old gag about spreadsheets being the easiest thing to excel at. Spreadsheets are, to borrow a phrase, the missionary position of data management. Lazy, unimaginative, and frankly, a bit tedious. Sadly, there is no ancient Indian instruction manual complete with graphic illustrations that teaches about the more advanced positions of data development. If there was, London advertising agencies would surely have a copy in reception, and the likes of Loaded Magazine have never run a Data Field of the Fortnight feature. The real problem is that a database has to be a shared resource, and without wanting to overextend the analogy, it really doesn't work if there are more than two people involved. Inevitably, everyone will have slightly different fields, the classic example being that two people will split first names and surnames, and one will put both in the same field. Then there's the infernal issue of the column labelled title, which will be roughly split between someone's job title and whether they are a Mr., Mrs., or occasionally, and worst of all, some official title like doctor, in which case, even in these chummy and informal times, the prospector is never sure whether first name terms are acceptable or not. The most infuriating thing about using spreadsheets for business development is the notes. I'll be straight with you. I love making notes on conversations I've had with prospects, occasionally to the point of inanity. I think it's important, once you've generated a rapport with somebody over the course of a conversation, to keep it alive in writing, so that when next I'm in contact with that prospect, no matter how distant that may be, I can rapidly rekindle that flame. Trying to make those kind of notes on a spreadsheet, however, and the thing goes nuts, either stretching the cell off the edge of the screen, or, if you've remembered to click wrap text, you end up with a full page of notes in one cell and so much white space in every other field that you get a headache and a burning sense of shame and guilt just from the very thought of printing the thing. And don't even get me started on printing from spreadsheets, it's a podcast in itself. Yep, databases may not be all that sexy, but try to get by on spreadsheets and you're well and truly screwed.
Think you've got your new business creds tuned up and ready to go? Think again. My guest this week is Steve Fair, who's been working in the agency new business industry for nearly as long as me, and he's got a few things to say about your attitude. Steve jointly runs Stevens & Matthews and another agency, Sponge, and he's all about new business. He's on a one-man mission to make sure you throw the right elbows at the right time and push your agency to the front of the pitch queue. Let's go. That's lovely. I love that. The road to hell paved with good intentions and all that. So anyway, welcome back to the show, Steve. Steve Fair. This is actually your second time because the first appearance didn't make publication because of all the bad language, slander, and defamation, and
or a dodgy microphone. So it turned
and that was just me.
We just had a nice chat for no good reason.
Yeah, well, Steve had a bum mic and it sounded like he was speaking on top of a building far, far away. So the interview will make it to the bootleg section at some point, and it'll probably be worth the fortune. But for now, we're straight into episode 2 of Keith and Steve. Now, just going back, recapping, because I thought the subject of the conversation was fascinating, and I think it's still incredibly relevant, probably more so now people are starting to think about getting back into the swing of things. Talking about the fundamentals of new business and the whole business of outsourcing a company's new business kind of goes back to what I described as a kind of a big bang moment back in the late 1990s. With a company called TMBC, which is and that obviously one of my first new business mentors, a fellow called John Pummel, who was there, and which obviously you're familiar with. So I joined the industry with John and soon found myself at the very pointy end of the new business stick. And at that time, Steve, I mean, it wasn't a very glamorous job, was it? It wasn't very pretty. It was just designed to get meetings for advertising agencies, really, wasn't it? I mean, that was kind of the point to it.
I joined the fray in sort of 2002 or something and worked for NB, which TNBC had become NB by then, and that was owned by Paul Hamilton. But it was very much, I remember my first day at NB being told that there's your desk, and I sort of said, oh, what do I do? And they went, we'll get meetings. And I was told what little meeting bonus I would get, which was basically beer money for Friday night for meetings that quite often were just there to make up the numbers. And I genuinely had no idea what to do. And my first client was handed to me, and it was McCann Erickson. And you kind of go, oh, right. I've heard of them. It was McCann Erickson Financial. And the lady there, I met her a couple of days later, Gertrude O'Neill. And she was fabulous. And after chatting with me for about 10 minutes, she said, you don't really know what you're doing, do you? and I said, no. no idea at all. I got this job. I do new business for agencies, it turns out. And so she gave me a few little pointers. She was incredibly helpful. And I got them into a whole bunch of stuff, FTSE and Euronext Liffey and a whole bunch of other things. Sure. And it was just by kind of winging it. And to this day, I've not had a lot of formal training. I went to Martrain College and got some marketing training and stuff. But I just kind of like talking to people, and that worked really well for McCann's.
Well, I think, you know, it's important that you say that. And a point of order is that, when I sort of first got together with Mr. Pummel that we mentioned earlier, I mean, he was kind of inspirational in getting me kind of geared towards the whole thing, because it wasn't really something that I was very I was very familiar with. I was more client side before then. And so what actually I remember I went up to him at one point and I was like, this is not on my first day. I was like, this is really not for me. this is just too hard. And he said, no. He said, just stick with it. He said, you'll get it. And so I think there's a lot of resistance from people to get into that kind of side of new business sales, because it isn't easy. It can be very kind of, soul destroying if you haven't got the right sort of mentality there. And I think it does require a certain type of person to get onto it. But I mean, obviously you've developed and grown within the industry. And I mean, you now I mean, you know, we're talking about Stevens and Matthews, right, as the agency. You prepare marketing, advertising, and sort of branding companies for growth.
So I've had Sponge for 16 years, and I think most agencies now probably know us. And it's something where we started to feel that part of the value for a lot of agencies, in fact, a lot of the value for a lot of agencies, was the advice and consultancy at the start of a project, you know, the briefing day that I think everybody does, is too often a bit of a sticking plaster exercise. And when we're about to start an outbound project with Sponge, you know, there's not an enormous amount of time to do it really fully. And so quite a few agencies really want me or really want Matt involved. You know, Matt's background, I'm Stephen of Stevens and Matthews, and Matt is Matthew. He was international head of comms for Atari. He was European marketing director at Midway Games. He's been a journalist, a PR, a TV presenter. And so, you know, they meet us and they kind of want that bit of the experience directly involved. And Stevens and Matthews is a way for people to do that. And largely, it's about auditing the agency, being incredibly brutal about it, and trying to view it from the point of view of a prospect, because quite a lot of things that agencies talk about aren't very interesting in the cold channel. They're fine for referrals, they're fine as internal comms processes, but they don't really work in the cold channel. And it's one of the reasons people write off their cold channel activity, because they tend to go in selling their agency the way they normally sell it, which is 80% of the time in a referral situation. So Stevens and Matthews is a response to that, really. It's we're brutal but easy to work with. Matt's often called the in-house Git by our team.
Yeah. How did he get that name? What's the point? What's the story behind that?
He's got a very healthy cynicism when it comes to agencies. You know, it's when we see the four things that every agency has. I can never remember them all, but things like on budget, on time, or based in the leafy suburbs of blah blah blah, or from
we're
our
different
buzzing,
because
yeah, from our buzzing office in Shoreditch. Like there's anybody out there with 200 grand to spend going, right, we need an agency, make sure they've got a buzzy office in Shoreditch. They don't care. Or our team of 26 people have 50 years of combined experience. And you go, what's that? I don't think that's on anyone's to-do. You know, nobody's saying, okay, we need an agency. Here's the numbers. 50 sure. years combined experience. None of those things happen. What it is decision makers really are sitting there saying, oh, Christ, we've got a warehouse full of shirts. We need to sell these shirts. If they find an agency that appears to be able to sell shirts for them, that's the agency they're going to want to hire, because we've all been there. Anybody running a business knows that finding the right supplier is such a huge relief. You know, you don't care about the money after that point. You don't care about so many other things. Finally, someone who can take this thing off my desk, get it done for me. And sure. so we help agencies to get their messaging right, get their proposition right, understand how to put together a B2B persona, and then create their entire messaging strategy for them. And that's it. That's all Stevens and Matthews is. It's not rocket science. You can do it yourself if you've got the time, the tenacity, and the objective point of view. Or we can do it for you.
And I mean, how long does that process take, Steve, just out of interest? I mean, you know, from the minute they contact you, I mean, when you get in under the skin and stuff, I mean, how long does that all take?
Yeah, I mean, how long is a deck of creds? It's it can be 3 weeks. It could be 6 to 8 weeks. You know, it depends on the agency size, but also how much collateral they've got. And also, it depends what sort of a long tail your biz dev process has. So we've just worked with an agency in Wales, which the first chunk of the project was probably 2 or 3 weeks. But we've then done a whole bunch of stuff for them afterwards, and we're currently talking to them about their rebranding, and we're working with them on that. And so these things are little add-ons they've chosen to ask us to do. So the core thing is about a month. You know, we do a first-off video call, which is 3 or 4 hours. We beast them a little bit on their creds presentation. We've got all these questionnaires we ask them to fill in about their competitors and blah, 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 blah. And then we get on with spending a few weeks looking at every touch point with every cold channel stakeholder they might have, and understanding what that looks like. And even if that spreads into their account management and how that's used to drive internal referrals or getting more testimonials to use as part of your process of selling in the cold channel, if you haven't got commercial results you can show, all of that is part of the things we consider, right down to competitor analysis and looking at SEO opportunities. So it's like hiring a biz dev person can genuinely see it from the outside and understand how cold channel works, but for a month. So they come in, get that sorted, and then leave you to get on with it. We've got an example at the moment of a new client who's hiring us to do it, and then they're going to hand that to one of the other new biz agencies. I know exactly who it is. I'm not going to name them because they probably don't want being named in it.
A competitor or somebody. Okay, all right.
Absolutely. They've done fine for them. I'll tell you some of the numbers. They've worked with them for 9 months. They've generated about 90 grand in profit, which isn't too bad, but it's below the average order value of the client. They want to look to push that up, and they don't think the new biz agency involved can do that, but they do think we can. So we're going to come in and help them with that strategy. They're then going to take the Bible they'll end up with, which I imagine is going to run to 30-odd pages, 40 pages of literally recommendation. Here is how to run your email output. Here are the bits of software you can use or services that will help you do that. Here is the messaging of your competitors. Here's the SEO things that you're missing. Here's the landing page that's letting you down. Here's where your web traffic leaves your website every single time. They'll take that, hand that to our competitors and run with it. And I'm delighted. You know, we talked about supercharging what our competitors are doing for them. If I'm the other new biz agency, they might feel a little bit...
You're like Cosworth to Ford.
There you go. I'll have that. I'm stealing that. I'll have that. That's going on the website by the end of the day. But I'd imagine when they hear we're doing it, they're not going to be super happy. But hopefully when they get handed this thing and it's basically a how-to, it kind of takes the pressure off them a bit to suddenly figure out these strategies, which they might be really struggling to do 9 months in where they've tried out their usual playbooks. And suddenly someone else is coming and going, give this a go. And we know the stuff we're going to recommend works because it's the stuff we're doing for our clients. So I kind of like the idea that if it's not quite working with one of our competitors, rather than firing them and starting all over again, we'll supercharge it.
See if you can boost it. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, I think that, in general, the business has kind of has changed so dramatically in a short period of time. I mean, it's not really been, you're talking about 20 years really tops for the evolution to get to this point. And I mean, really, now it's quite a sophisticated side to to any company's activity now is how new business. I mean, whereas before it was just stick you in a desk and let you, as long as you've got a desk and a phone, you can just go for it and just make some calls. I mean, the amount of times people have said to me, just get on the phone, Smithy, just go and generate some calls. And that was good. That was okay at the time, but I think now it's become a very kind of much more sort of kind of subtle sort of process now, because obviously we've got so many more touch points. And I mean, one of those that I wanted to kind of, one of the subjects I wanted to cover was that, obviously things have changed now for companies, given the fact that, we're all sort of slowly getting back to a new way of working. What do you think are going to be the kind of the biggest challenges and changes to the role over the next couple of years?
I mean, obviously, something that we've wrestled with ourselves, video calls. I think
we've got that down now, Steve. I think we're okay.
That was all my microphone, so that's in the bin. It's actually waiting to be collected. I'm sending the thing back. But no, I think we're already talking about coaching agencies to sell better on video calls. Agencies are often pretty clumsy face-to-face, so the added abstraction of the video call, along with the technical challenges and the presenting skill set, they don't necessarily have that. It's going to be a challenge. And I think many agencies as well think that they just need to get in the room. You must have heard people talk about that. Get me in the room.
Just get me there.
And they don't realize it's a fallacy. That's linked to the fact that 80% of their wins come from referrals, and they're much, much easier to convert and easier to get that meeting. And so we all, agencies everywhere, they think, oh, get me in the room, I convert. No, you convert referrals. That isn't the same as converting cold channel, which is why they don't like doing cold channel, because it feels so inefficient, because it kind of is. However, if you treat the video calling thing, one, as not something that's going to defeat you, because you'll probably still convert the same low but important number of cold channel opportunities, but your referrals will convert as many anyway. I think the psychological barrier to understanding that cold will always have a lower conversion ratio and referrals can still be converted, that's the thing to overcome, as well as developing these skill sets. So I think while it might seem a bit simplistic, getting your video pitch done well is going to be incredibly important. So that's something we're certainly looking at.
It's going to be worth kind of investing in not necessarily a studio of some description, but definitely a kind of a broadcast area where you've got your brand clearly visible and all that, all the stuff you would normally do on a face-to-face thing is now, you need to think about your frame and how that all comes across now. So
I don't know with you, do you know the Peter Levitan book, Buy This Book, Win More Pitches, the Levitan pitch?
Heard of it, never read it.
It's pretty good. You know, there's, like any of these books, 70% of it's brilliant, 30% of it you go, nah. But it does talk about rehearsing pitches and quotes. I mean, dozens of top agency people who they rehearse their pitches, you know, massive names on crazy salaries, the famous people in the agency world, they rehearse their pitches. Now, right. We've got clients who kind of go, I swear, I'll do it on the night. And no, don't. Certainly, if there's three or four of you, rehearse it. Know who's going to say what. You can still keep it a little bit loose. You can still have little twitches and signals you can give each other, little looks where you know you're going to hand over where you wouldn't normally. But the more you do that, the more naturally that comes, the more impromptu it seems. And on a video call, you know, we've had the 4-hour briefing sessions for Stephen Matthews, where the client has just—it's been like a clown car on fire. They just, no one knows what they're saying, when they're supposed to say it, and they're staring off into the middle distance. And we're kind of going, no, get this sharp, because agencies are forever saying what they are, but then don't behave like it. And so, if you're going to seem on it, if you're going to seem like you've got the technology sorted, comfortable pitching, comfortable communicating, get that done. If that means doing a whole bunch of rehearsal video calls with your mates or your mum or whatever, do that. Yeah. And I think that's going to be really important. The left hand, buy this book, Win More Pitches. Buy it, cross out every time he talks about meeting and right above it, video call. And I think that those things will be crucial.
Yeah, and I think a lot of skills will kind of translate to the small screen, you know, when we're pitching. And, you know, I think because a lot of actual face-to-face pitch work is done very much at a distance anyway. I mean, you know, you're never actually kind of standing right next to them and, doing the kind of interpersonal skills so much anyway. It's very, you know, it's very much a kind of a staged environment for people. Yeah. That side of things will be much more kind of interesting. I mean, do you think that, though, within the kind of agency environment, that the new business role in itself is going to be as crucial or as vital?
That's a really interesting question. It's the priority for agencies is going to have to be making sure they've still got a way to outreach, because,
right,
the cold call is dead is a nonsense that just suits the, you know, win without pitching stuff, which doesn't make it. It's a lovely, I understand that people not wanting to go into expensive competitive pitches. I get that. But I think those books like the Blair End stuff and things like that, they hide the fact that we're always pitching, really. You know, sure. if you're talking to someone, you're pitching. Forget competitive pitch. You are always in one of those.
And if you've never met them before, you're cold pitching, surely.
Exactly right. You know, I think networking opportunities or just a thing where you end up, you know, I don't really know David Simpson, but he's this fab guy, he's American. He hosts this thing every Thursday where he has this kind of pub meetup and he hosts games and things. And I've done a couple of those. And he's always got these great people from all different agencies and clients and things and gets them all together. And he always says, this isn't a pitch, you're not selling. And I kind of think everybody here knows that's not true. We might not deliver a pitch, but of course, if you seem like a smart person, if you seem like you're the sort of person who's going to give straight answers and be an empathetic human being, then you're pitching. Someone in there may well think, oh, I wonder if we can do something with that guy. So we're all,
yeah.
I think the new business process is a systemic organizational thing anyway, and agencies, the ones that fall over, the ones who don't get that, who think you can employ a new business agency or an in-house business developer and just kind of stare at them and wonder when it's all going to happen. It's a culture. It's about getting your whole agency involved in it, understanding that when that phone rings, could be the marketing director of Tesco's looking for a digital agency. Always think that every time the phone rings. I do. Anytime the Sponge phone rings or the Stevens and Matthews phone rings, as far as I'm concerned, that's Saatchi's ringing up to hire us and give us millions of pounds. And until it's not, it is. You know, that's the way I think about it.
So I mean, from your perspective, I mean, you know, you were talking about giving agencies a holistic view, you know, sort of giving a holistic treatment, for their new business. I mean, do you get into that level of detail where it's about, you know, how people are answering the phones or what the response time is to all these sorts of things? I mean, does that come up?
Absolutely. I think agencies are judged all the way by prospects. And it's, right, that's going to become and in fact, I've got a thing I was talking about with Matt the other day that addresses that a little bit. But how quickly you answer the phone, how quickly you respond to an email, all of these things, how well you respond to a proposal, whether you send the attachment or have to send another email 3 minutes later going, oh, it fell off. We all know full well that means I forgot to attach it. Nobody's fooled by that. But these things are important. They are much, much more important than saying that you're proactive, saying that you're on budget on time. You know, on budget on time, I joked about it earlier, but rather if you've got to say that, well, there's a problem, isn't there? Surely, either you are or you aren't. Just behave like it. Nobody reads those words and says, oh, fabulous, I've found an agency that's on budget on time. They just, they know that sometimes doesn't
happen. And they're different.
Yeah, oh, we're marketing with a difference. Oh, Christ, here we go. So it's all these things we say we are, is much more important just to be them. And so I think that's one of the big things at the moment is it's now easier for someone to go off and get a different agency in to pitch.
Because if
it's no longer going to be us all sitting around boardroom tables with our PowerPoint or whatever it's going to be, if you can literally ring someone and say, 3 o'clock today, can you get on a Zoom call and take us through your general creds?
Yeah.
Well, if you've said, I'm going to send you my stuff and you don't send it, by the end of that day, you could be done. That could be over for you.
God.
So it's got to be a lot more reactive. You've got
It's going to speed up the new business process considerably, isn't it? I mean, if you follow that logic down, if you follow that rabbit down the hole, I mean, what you're talking about is kind of an on-demand pitching ability.
Yeah. Why not? Why not have a thing ready where you've got...
Oh, I love that.
An 8 minute, if someone rings up and says, can you get on a Zoom call with us tomorrow, that you don't have to go, oh God, no, right, we need a construction deck put together. No. Just have an 8 minute thing that deals with the commercial outcomes you tend to cause. And that's, you know, we can help you put that together, or you can put it together yourself. You won't, agencies, you won't do it. You know, you'd say you will, but you won't actually do it.
Gunners.
Get us to do it. But things like responding quickly, keeping your promises, being honest, not overselling, they're going to be more important than ever. They've always been important, but they're going to be more important than ever.
You know, it's amazing you say that, because I mean, obviously, you know, my business is, you know, it has a very much a digital front end to it. And, you know, a lot of our kind of referral work or cold inquiries, inbound stuff, comes in via the website. Mm-hmm. And I'm always on the horns of a dilemma about if it comes in via email. I mean, I get copied in immediately on it anyway. And there's two of us will get copied in immediately anyway. But it's just a question of how quickly do you respond? Does it look too keen? I mean, are you being too? And I think based on what you've just said, the ability to pounce on an inquiry immediately and just to get back and just to say, we're dealing with it. We've got we've got your message and we're happy to, you know, to help you out and all that sort of stuff. I mean, that's going to be so important.
Without a doubt, I think that the impression I prefer to leave, if someone thinks I'm a bit too keen, they probably won't want to hire me, because I am. I am that sort of guy.
There you go.
I get really excited. You know, there's a lot of times I talked earlier about when pitching, you know, having little signals to give each other. It's something I'm doing right now. I can feel it. I talk too fast in pitches. I don't care. I don't, you know, I'd much prefer that people get that I genuinely love this. I enjoy it. It gets firing. Sure. Belly. I want to get that across in every interaction. And if me responding almost immediately to an email makes someone think, hey, he's on it, that's good. Because that's the way we want to behave for our clients. When we've failed, it's because we've let things get away from us. That's the biggest thing. When we've had team members who don't have that kind of snappy response to an opportunity or even a message, anything, I don't care. Get on it. Like, if you're on it, people like that. And if genuinely someone thinks, oh, they're a bit too keen, no worries. Go find someone who's not as keen.
Oh, that's interesting. That's great. But, I mean, so... given the work that you undertake and the fact that obviously a lot of it can cut across the sort of most areas of the new business discipline,
yeah.
I mean, are there any kind of common factors that you would say that your clients have? Are there certain traits that they all seem to display apart from not having any new business?
Well, yeah, I remember the common themes really are the things we all know it, but they've either got no time for it, they haven't got the skills in house, they're not going to keep up a sustained effort, their agency messaging is poor, or the proposition isn't carefully put together. And these things are all fixable. They're almost always at the bottom of the list for agencies, though. We did a mini study a couple of years ago where every agency that inquired that had a team page, we logged where the business development person was on that team page. It's always at the bottom, always at the bottom. New business is agencies' kind of dirty secret. They're ashamed.
Why is that?
I think it's because people think that selling, it's like admitting that you're not marketing yourself well enough without realizing that selling is part of marketing. I think it's that, oh, if we have to ring up people and sell what we do, we can't be that good. And that's a nonsense, because you're literally for other companies doing exactly that. You know, it's, I don't think there's any shame at all in selling done well. And when you see the biz dev person at the bottom, I think it's a missed opportunity, because a cold channel prospect, who's the most likely person they'll have spoken to? It's yeah. that biz dev person. So if they're tucked away at the bottom, you're saying to someone that you've approached cold, oh, the least important person in our company contacted you. I think it's a missed opportunity. And it also does give away the attitude that agencies tend to have to new biz. And so along with those things, you know, no time, no skills, no sustained effort, and poor proposition building, it's that kind of new business coming last attitude. One of our current clients, and you know, they'll probably fire me if they hear this thing, but they
there's a risk.
We'll survive. They we rung them up to say, where's the creds? We've been waiting for these new creds for like 3 weeks. We've got prospects waiting for them. You're killing us. And they said, oh, the thing is, we've had proper work to do. And we kind of went, this is the next proper work. If you don't start thinking about it like it, 6 months from now, you'll be firing us saying, oh, it didn't really work out. Mm-hmm. This is the stuff we need. But that, oh, proper work, that's just the worst way to look at it. If you're going to invest in new business in the cold channel, which is tough, it's inefficient, it has low conversion rates, it takes a long time, it's going to fill you with doubt, at least get behind it. Otherwise, you're dooming yourself to failure. If you're not going to get behind it, don't do it. It's just don't do it.
I remember I've got a great story in my back pocket about the chairman of a PR agency, a fellow called Jonathan Choate, who back quite a few years ago said to one of his people, because they basically, I'd actually delivered some new business or a new business inquiry to them, and sort of somebody in the ranks said, well, it's not really the sort of thing that we want to deal with right now. And I remember him absolutely giving a broadside by email, but which was basically, you know, are we ever in a position where we want to turn stuff away, you know? And I think, you know, that to be new business ready all the time, I think it's an important discipline for any company. And I've learned over the years as a company owner now to, you know, to basically to always have a mindset of, you know, looking for new channels, new opportunities, new you know, to a part of your brain is always devoted to new business and to mm-hmm. prospecting in some way, shape or form, because you're never quite sure, you're never what's coming around the corner. Who'd have predicted this pandemic would have caused so much aggravation for everybody?
Yeah.
And you know, and the ones that have managed to cope through it have been the ones that have always had the ability to just pick up, you know, dust off, and you know, it's the monkey that can swim, basically, you know, it's being able to cope with that kind of change.
We had an objection a couple of weeks ago when we approached an agency we love the look of, and they said, oh, we have to turn business away. And I remember Matt turned to me and said, what a weird company. Why would you set your company up where you just don't even want to increase capacity?
Turn business away.
You don't say, well, let's make sure we hire a few more people. I said, aren't there like 10 million new unemployed people about to arrive on the market? Shouldn't they be kind of going, look, we're nailing this. We need to get on this and grow the hell out of this. Not, oh, well, let's just turn away the new stuff. And the truth is, the objection probably isn't the truth. They don't want to say whatever the real version is, whether it's cash flow. Sure. Or they just don't want to hire us and don't want to be rude. That's, you know, that's fine by me. I'd prefer to be told to bugger off. But it is weird that there are people who genuinely sit there and turn business away while other businesses are out there scratching around sometimes, despite the fact they're doing a great job and just maybe don't market themselves as aggressively or whatever it might be. So, yeah, I think I'm always delighted to have an inquiry or for a cold channel outreach that we've done for ourselves to go well. Because I want to have a sustainable business. I want to be doing this for a long time. I've been doing it for 16 years. Really enjoy it still. I never had a job I enjoyed for more than 2 years. You know, I worked for the Institute of Directors in the membership marketing team. By the end of that, I hated it. I worked at NB for 2 years. Hated it by about the seventh week. To have a job that you enjoy for 16 years is such a luxury. I want people to feel that way about their company, not like, oh, we're turning business away. We don't want to do more and bigger.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that this has been a great test for certainly agency owners in, you know, how they've been able to adapt, how quickly they've been able to change pace and to work with it, because I haven't heard, as from my end of things, I haven't heard any of our clients or client base saying, oh, we're going to stop now. You know, they're all picking back up. They're all ready to go. So, I mean, I think there was about a 2-month shell shock, you know, when people were still walking around holding their hands over their ears, wondering what the hell's going on. Pretty much they've all buckled down and got back into it. And definitely things are starting to move in the right direction now. And similarly, a change of direction as well. It's not just the same thing. It's doing it differently. And I think that ability, and what certainly what you're providing in terms of the service you provide, is going to be more and more kind of what people need to focus on in the short term, in order to get their house in order, you know, in order to survive the next 2-3 years to ride it out.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, quite a lot of the time, you know, the internal discussion here about a new client for the consultancy side of things is that we sit there going, oh man, they just need to get on with it. They've got everything they need. They're just not doing any of it. And sometimes it's they don't know how to, or they're scared, or internally there isn't the structure to actually support the activity. And all of those things we can help with. But it is really frustrating when you see good agencies doing good work who are getting incoming leads and referrals because the work is good, not understand that with a significant but certainly not impossible effort, they could get that marginal growth that comes with cold channel biz dev that then drives the next wave of referrals and the next load of testimonials and drives incoming leads. I you know, I love it when clients realize, no, we just got to keep at this. It's tough, but it's worthwhile. It's a struggle sometimes, but a rewarding struggle. And so it's not just let's get your creds right. It's about let's get your head in that space. Let's get the attitude in your agency where cold channel biz dev is part of the fun, because it's tough. So you better make it as fun as you can.
You're absolutely right. It's almost like you see those models of the brain and what various areas of the brain cover, and you know, you sometimes wish that some people had a slightly more developed new business area to their brain, you know.
I'm nicking that as well. I'm going to make it. Hypothalamus new businesses.
The hypothalamus.
Yeah, there you go.
So we've covered the kind of serious side of it. I mean, that's about as serious as I think you're prepared to get with us anyway. But so when you're not doing the business of new business, I mean, what do you use to relax? How do you switch off?
You know what? The first thing is probably when I get home, I'm the cook in the house. My wife.
Oh, lovely. Okay, kindred spirit here.
Yeah, I there's nothing more cathartic than chopping away at all the stuff for a decent dinner.
Using a big knife.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's an 8-inch cook's knife. It's a Taylor's Eyewitness Sheffield steel knife that I sharpened.
Beautiful.
On my own. And I went with my wife. We went to Prue Leith's Cookery School. Did all the knife skills course and all that kind of stuff. So I'm there with my rolling chop, getting everything
ready. So you still got all your fingers?
Oh, yeah. You only cut your fingers with blunt knives, Keith. That's the truth. Sharp knives, you never cut yourself. But yeah, I love cooking. Every Sunday morning, I ride 30 or 40 miles with a friend. Our bikes and have a ride, because I'm a bit on the overweight side. I lost a load of weight 2 years ago and I've put a bunch of it back on, so I'm trying to be good. I'm still it's lockdown, and the rules of lockdown, you have to eat a lot of peanuts, Bombay mix and Pringles, which I'm doing.
But thank God, I thought it was just me.
Honestly, we'll open a family size bag of Bombay mix, stick it on, and I go, oh my God, we've eaten it. It's dreadful.
You know, I've got a thing with Haribo at the moment as well. I just, oh man. Because this is the thing. A year ago, people would have accused my wife of being a prepper. All right. But now she's just a switched on shopper, and we're buying all my condiments come in bulk now. I've got a gallon of HP sauce. I've got a gallon of Branston pickle. And this is all because I live in the States. This is all stuff that we get through British, you know, expat stores and stuff like that. And I've got 10 jars of Marmite as well sitting in my cupboard. You know?
So that was in the news today, Marmite, wasn't it? They were tweeting about how someone said, why are they not the big jars anymore? And it's because they buy brewer's yeast. Because the pubs are closed, brewers are not producing as much yeast, and Marmite now can't sustain the large jars. They only do the small jars.
Well, I see some I see some definite new product development there in the kind of... the artisanal yeasts and artisanal Marmites. That might be interesting.
Wild Marmite, though. See, that's real ale. I'm a shareholder in BrewDog and Seven Brothers. And
you okay?
Iron and Signature Brewing. And, you know, all very small shareholdings. But I love all that. I love a good real ale. I'm not a big drinker, funnily enough. Two drinks in, I'm sort of bored with the experience. But a good beer, I really enjoy that two beers. And then I kind of go, it's time to do something else.
Okay, so what's coming up? I mean, anything, this is the kind of the part of the show where we sort of give you an advert and stuff, if you've a couple of minutes to yourself. How can people get hold of you? What would you like them to know about you? How they can engage you and all that sort of stuff?
You know what? If any of this has resonated, look me up on LinkedIn. It's Steve Fair and the company Stevens and Matthews. But yeah, you sent me an email saying, you know, little chance to promote things at the end. If you like some of this, then great, get in touch. If I sound like an absolute tool to you, then don't, because you definitely won't like me, because I'm like this all the time.
Nice. I love it. I like the cut of your jib anyway, Steve. That sounds good to us.
Yes, you too. So, you know what I've noticed? I've listened to a few of yours. You ask people what they do to relax. What do you do to relax?
Like you, I like to cook. I'm the cook of the family as well. So generally tend to down tools and then straight into the kitchen and pick up another set of tools.
What's your speciality?
Well, it's weird actually, because obviously I've had to translate my skills across the Atlantic into American food. So I've kind of been sort of picking up on, I mean, right now, okay, I'll tell you what I've done right now. I have a Boston butt pork joint sitting outside defrosting, which will tomorrow. You don't need a big smoker. All you need is an oven. It's the perfect smoker. Mm-hmm. Get it in the oven low and slow. Big Boston butt pork joint, okay, and let it sit there at about, you know, well, I guess in your money, it'd be about 160, something like that, heat to low temperature, and then all day, 8 hours, but it's covered in, you know, sugar and spices and all that sort of stuff, you know. But and then, because the thing is, we're now into lockdown, we're trying to, you know, save money and not sort of waste stuff. So, you know, you can then turn that into, God, this is a cooking show. This has turned into a cooking show. But I'll leave the recipe in the show notes if anybody's interested.
Nice.
But anyway, Steve, listen, mate, thank you very much for being on. You've been great fun. And give my best to Matt and tell him we said hi. And hopefully we'll get you back when things are a bit better. But it's been great. So thank you very much for your hard work. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks for having me. All the best.
All right, Steve. Take care.
Yes, bye.
So that's another episode complete. As ever, Steve is pretty uncompromising when it comes to feedback on sales issues, but in times like these, many people like a straight-talking, shoot-from-the-hip kind of approach. There's a great point in there about making sure that your agency can react differently to new business inquiries in this video call environment. There's a different set of communications challenges for us all, and having the awareness and the ability to work on and offline, in person and on screen, is vital. Steve's contact details and my recipe for barbecue pulled pork can be found on the show notes on the website at thefuelpodcast.com. Many thanks to my co-producer Donna, Barney and Banksy for the music, Jeremy Davis for another wonderfully witty monologue, naturally Steve Fair for his words of wisdom, and mostly you, our listeners, for sending us your words of encouragement and feedback on the show. So join me same time next week for another fascinating free dive into the world of the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?